Good morning. This is Weekend Ozarks at Large for Sunday, October 7th, 2012. I'm Christina Thomas.
I'm Kyle Kellums. The University of Arkansas Fort Smith's 32nd season of entertainment presents The Midtown Man, October 8th at 7:30 p.m. at the Fort Smith Convention Center. This concert includes stars from the original cast of the Jersey Boys performing hits from the 60s, the Beatles, the Beach Boys, and the Jackson 5. Tickets and more information available at uafs.edu.
Ahead on this weekend edition of Ozarks, a Houdini Halloween and drawing awareness to cyberbullying. But first,
it is that time of year. On Monday, October 8th, the Symphonic Band and Wind Symphony at the University of Arkansas will be on stage at Walton Arts Center, and W. Dale Warren is here with me. It is that time.
It is, Kyle. That time indeed.
Does it come quicker?
Oh,
every
yes.
Year?
Yes, the older I get, the quicker it comes. I used to say the older I get, the better I was. But now it's the older I get, the quicker it comes. Yeah, it is.
This is a staple, a tradition mid-semester about that the first concerts of the year take place.
We do that on purpose, obviously. It's a midterm concert and then a concert right before finals so that we have the amount of time we need to prepare a full program.
Now, the majority of the musicians that will be on stage have done this before, but you got a crop that haven't. Some
that's
freshmen.
Absolutely true. I don't have a lot of freshmen, of course, in Wind Symphony, but Chris has got several freshmen that are really spectacular, actually, in symphonic band. So we've got a really great freshman class at the university right now, and our grad class is quite good. So we're really pleased with the mix of old and new.
Well, the symphonic band will start things off Monday night.
Indeed. They're going to play the Duke of Marlborough Fanfare by Percy Grainger, setting for brass. It's pretty exciting. Of course, it's vintage Grainger, and it should electrify the house right away. We're going to get their attention, to be sure. Then we go into one of your favorite composers, I know,
yes.
Ralph Vaughan Williams, Flourish for Wind Band, and another staple of the repertoire, and then a piece that a lot of folks may not know by John Barnes Chance, his Elegy. John Barnes Chance is a really famous wind band composer, but we lost him really early based on a lightning strike, actually. And, you know, he had a lot more great music left to write. But this Elegy is powerful and very dark and foreboding.
And then, before the Wind Symphony, and I'm going to let you pronounce this French composer's name.
Darius Milhaud.
Milhaud.
And we're doing his famous Suite Francaise, which, of course, is all about the famous places that you've heard about in France and the five-movement works based on a different region in France. So it is one of the main staples of the wind band repertoire.
It's lush.
It's like the countryside. Mm-hmm. It is. The topography, the trees, the flora. I mean, it's France. It's what it is. I mean, you go from the beach to, the forest country to the highlands. I mean, it's a stunning piece. All 5 minutes are very different.
Then intermission, then you grab the baton, and you begin with a piece, Megan Miller. I've listened to this.
My summertime is my quest for what's the great new stuff and who are the great new composers, because we in the wind band world tend to want to do stuff that maybe you haven't heard of before. We want to keep composers working, and Megan's 25 years old. And she's a fiddle player, and she'll tell you she's a fiddle player. But I got turned on to this by a really good friend of mine. I said, okay, what's the best thing you've heard lately? And he goes, you got to do Django. And I go, I don't even know who wrote Django. So now we got a relationship going. Actually, Megan's brother is in the Walton College of Business.
Really?
Yeah, that's totally coincidence. So she's coming up for the concert to visit brother and to be here for the Arkansas premiere.
How exciting.
Yeah, that's very cool. And she'll do a little pre-concert talk so that everybody can understand it. About what the meaning of Django is and the purpose of her writing the piece. But we want to do it since, we're right in the middle of the presidential election, mm-hmm. and it's about political unrest. Obviously, Django is exactly mm-hmm. the definition. And so, she's taking a pretty hard stand here on some pretty serious issues.
That's exciting. And the composition itself is a couple years old, if that?
Yes. Well, yeah. This particular version is 2011. She wrote it in 2010. It's an orchestra piece, then turned into an absolute wind ensemble, one on a part piece, then a wind symphony piece for a little bit more expanded instrumentation. I think this version is the best one by far, actually.
When it's a composer like that, that and you're told about this work and you are interested in doing it, do you call her? Do you pick up the phone and just say, hey?
No, I just popped her an email, actually. Yeah. And then she sent me a link to a YouTube that's a virtual. It's not even a real ensemble playing it. It's all, of course, you know, synthesized. But I just went, oh, this is really good. So I ordered the score, started studying the score. I go, oh, we've got to do this. And we're going to open this on the first concert just to kind of – it's got edge. I'll put it that way. And the audience, I think, will really enjoy the different colors and the timbres that she gets.
21st Century. Than Holst.
Well, this is our anchor piece for our part of the program, like the MIO is for the symphonic bands. I mean, you can't beat Gustav Holst. Hammersmith is about where he grew up, Hammersmith, England, you know, just 6 miles west of London. And that borough, and it's about the Thames River. I mean, you hear the river, you hear the town, you hear the pubs, you hear the people, you hear Moriarty and Sherlock Holmes. I mean, everything that you would experience if you went there to visit is in this piece, and it's a monumental work. I mean, it's spectacular. Our big piece is this new concerto by Jack Stamp that he wrote for his teacher. And Chow Ragsdale and Fernando Valencia are going to play. And they play everything in the book. I mean, we just rehearsed it. I just came from rehearsal. It's a scream.
Well, Fernando and Chow, of course, too, I've seen them work. And they can play. To them, the world is a percussion instrument.
It is. If you can hit it, it's an instrument. That's exactly right.
Are they frantically moving about?
Frantically. Chow had trouble today making it from the 12 or 13 timpani to the marimba, you know, I mean, just in time to get there to play his licks. And then Fernando's got to navigate the drum set and the vibes and all that sort of thing. So it's a huge setup on the front of the stage. And, you know, it's kind of a dueling banjos deal where you've got, you know, Fernando on one side dueling it out with Chow on the other side. So it's really fun.
And then you'll end it with a composition called Soundings.
You see that it's written in 1997. Well, he never published it. It's got one performance for the commissioning ensemble, and that's it. We're going to be the number two group to play it, and he's finally going to publish it. But we're doing an unpublished version. So it's way hip and cool. Of course, he's the composer in residence for the New York Philharmonic.
Right, right.
So he's used to writing for some pretty good players.
And he has been a conductor of many ensembles as well.
Joe gets around.
Baltimore.
He gets all over the place. Yeah, he's the consummate musician. And I mean, we played one of his pieces in Carnegie, and he came, as a matter of fact. You know, just he couldn't be a more gracious, wonderful human being. And we've played everything he's written for band. I mean, I'm a Turin-aholic, without question. But this piece has got everything, and that's why we're closing with it, because it's just on fire.
You and your education and musical colleagues at the university get a year older.
We do.
The ensembles do not.
That's right. Students don't get older. We do.
Does that make any difference whatsoever for
Tons.
You?
Tons. Oh, tons. The culture. It's where they come from. It's different than where we come from. Of course, I'm much older than you.
No, you're not.
I am quite a bit older. I'm Methuselah's age. But the whole point here is, yes, the students come to us very different generation to generation. There's no question about that. What I really love about this group of students right now is they're so hungry and they're sponges and they want information. They want knowledge. They want to get better. They want to do their best. You don't have to motivate them to go practice and to come prepared and to, you know, be engaged. I mean, rehearsals are a total joy.
Not a bad job, is it?
Not a bad job. Can't imagine anything better, quite frankly.
Monday night, 7:30, Walton Arts Center.
You bet.
Thank you.
Thank you.
This Halloween season, the essence of the great Houdini will make a ghostly appearance on two separate occasions in Eureka Springs. The popular turn of the 19th century escape artist will be brought to life by illusionist Sean Paul and his partner Julianne. In advance of these events, Jacqueline Froelich decided to test Sean Paul's skills by handcuffing him in the KUAF news studios.
Now, this one goes down first.
Oops, sorry. And the second one?
Right.
Latch tight.
Right.
Let me see if it's locked.
Okay.
All right, it's locked. And it's got kind of a
hinge. Okay, now try and pull them off of my hands.
They're
all right?
Hinged. Okay.
Pull them off.
Two coughs. Heavy duty steel. There's no way I can pull them off.
Right. Okay. So it's quite challenging for me to even unlock it myself.
With the key. You just
all right. Go ahead and unlock me. Go ahead and unlock it. Would you?
Okay. Yes. No, I can't barely unlock it.
It's, okay. it's a struggle even to unlock it with
yes,
the key.
Yes.
All right, so now go ahead and lock me up again.
Okay. This is so fun locking you up.
Yes.
Because he's really cute.
Okay. All right.
Put the key down.
Right. And so now I'm going to step behind the counter here.
Okay. In the KUAF studio newsroom.
Right. Mm-hmm. So now.
Sean Paul's squirming around. And I can't. Oh. He's grimacing as he's trying to get the cuffs off. Hey, he got them off.
These are much tougher than probably any handcuffs you've ever
seen. Sure, like for heavy-duty criminals.
That's right,
yes.
A hardened criminal. All right.
But you could describe Sean Paul as a hardened illusionist. He and his partner and spouse, Julianne, a stage medium, devote their days and nights to honing their performance art, which they call intrigue theater, now showing at Gavioli Theater in Uptown Eureka Springs.
The Gavioli is an amazing venue. I would say that it's both intimate and absolutely intriguing. A stone building with a bell tower, beautiful, amazing stained glass windows. And we've structured the environment to feel like a Victorian theater or parlor performance.
From the moment this beautiful young couple step on stage, regaled in their Victorian dress, they capture your imagination with feats of psychokinesis, mentalism, even clairvoyance. Audience members, some of whom agree to be hypnotized, are routinely asked to join in their act.
In the last year, we've added two segments that really, quite literally, bring people to the edge of their seats. And it's an amazing experience for me as a performer to look forward. Look at the audience and see people leaning forward and hearing nervous laughter. And I have to say, prior to doing Intrigue Theater, I've never experienced that, where people really can be, you can see people in the audience that they're legitimately freaked out.
And through October, Sean Paul and Julianne plan to take things a step further by staging several free public performances in homage to historic escape artist Harry Houdini.
He's America's first superstar. There's so much, there's so many parallels between Eureka Springs and the life and the career of Harry Houdini. The mantra of the town of Eureka Springs is the extraordinary escape.
The great Harry Houdini, born Eric Weiss in Budapest, Hungary in 1874, emigrated with his family to Wisconsin when he was only 4 years old. Uneducated, but with a penchant for acrobatics and competitive sport, Harry, as a young man, fell in with circuses and medicine shows, where he picked up the art of escaping, first from handcuffs, then later canvas mail bags, large metal milk cans and packing crates, and eventually straitjackets suspended from great heights, something Sean Paul will attempt on October 4th in Eureka Springs at noon.
Thursday, October 4th at noon. The newspaper, the Citizen newspaper, in a classic Houdini manner, it was very common for the newspaper to issue a formal challenge to Harry Houdini, and I've accepted it. And we decided that we couldn't get permission to hang over the downtown area of Eureka Springs, so we turned to the Crescent Hotel, and they offered the edge of the observation deck, the top floor, where I will be hoisted up by my feet in a straitjacket. And they're only going to let me down if I can free myself.
70 feet above the front steps of the Crescent Hotel. Then, on October 20th at 7 p.m. in downtown Basin Spring, Sean Paul will attempt the Houdini milk can escape.
So 2 weeks later, following, you know, provided it's successful and I don't get hurt with the extraordinary escape of a suspended straitjacket, we have located and obtained a 70-year-old milk can. It's of the era of Houdini, and it's airtight, it's waterproof, and it holds 40 to 50 gallons of water. So we will pass the lid through the audience, the crowd, and have them somebody bring it back up to us, and then they can inspect the milk can itself filled with water, and then I will get inside and we will have representatives there that will padlock the lid shut. And what we'll do is we will ask the audience, once they see that lid come down on the milk can, to all take a big deep breath and hold their breath and wait for me to emerge from behind the curtain.
Of course, Julianne will be on hand for all the events, just in case.
I think I'll probably just be helping put the cuffs on, helping with the lid. We will have somebody looking all of that over to, you know, make sure it's, you know, airtight and he can't get out. But I will be standing by, and he will have a wrench inside of the can in case there is a problem and he can't get out, and he's going to clunk the side of it. And I'll have to make the announcement that we have to get him out.
Through decades of escape acts, Houdini almost lost his life just once in 1915 while being buried alive in California. For a time, he served as president of the Society of American Magicians, still in existence. And he was an associate of noted physician and writer Sir Arthur Conan Doyle, an avid follower of spiritualism, of which Houdini was a skeptic. Houdini even tried to outlaw fortune-telling, all the rage in 1925 across America, by championing a congressional bill. It failed. Houdini's most famous escape was from a glass-water torture chamber. He spent the remainder of his life performing on the road. He died on Halloween night in 1926 from complications of an appendicitis. And on Halloween night in Eureka Springs, Sean Paul and Julianne will host a seance after a special evening performance of Intrigue Theater.
Then I will give the history and the background and the relevance to what we're doing that night. I'll even give a demonstration like Harry Houdini would, as far as some of the things he would do in debunking fraudulent mediums. And then when it's time, close to midnight, to reach out and make contact, then I will turn it over to Juliana Faye, where she will conduct the actual seance.
And hopefully we'll come through with Houdini. Hopefully Houdini will come through. But being that it is at the Crescent and there is so much activity there, ghostly activity, I don't see a problem with at least communicating with one or two of the other spirits that might be around. So yeah, we'll see. I think it'll be
an exciting evening.
A great night, yeah.
An exciting evening with the spirit of Houdini. By the way, Sean Paul and Julianne have been married for 11 years. Clearly a very magical relationship. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Jacqueline Froelich.
My news director wanted me to ask you, do you have insurance?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Who's your insurance provider?
I'm not going to say that. Lloyd's of London.
To learn more about the free public Houdini escape and the live seance? To learn more about the free public Houdini escape and the live seance, you can visit intriguetheater.com. Just heard about a Houdini-esque sort of event, a couple of them. That's the inspiration for this weekend's montage, Magic.
Magic.
So here are 9 references, some of them quite obvious, some of them not, in culture, to magic and abracadabra.
Ladies and gentlemen, for my first trick, small miracle.
This magic moment, so different and so new, was like any other until I kiss you, and then it happened.
And like the baseless fabric of this vision, the cloud-capped towers, the gorgeous palaces, the solemn temples, the great globe itself, yea, all which it inherit, shall dissolve, and like this insubstantial pageant faded, leave not a rack behind. We are such stuff as dreams are made on.
Wingardium Leviosa.
Reach out and grab.
Ladies and gentlemen, my first trick of the evening is one that involves considerable risk. Anyone in the audience who would be irrevocably damaged by seeing a man drown should leave now. For when I tell you the young lady who taught me this illusion actually died performing it, you will understand the seriousness of the dangers involved.
If you'd like to see how you did on this week's montage, go to our webpage, ozarksatlarge.com.
Northwest Arkansas is home to several towns, cities, and communities full of happenings every 7 days. Ozarks at Large's Timothy Dennis brings us the talk of the towns in this morning's Week in Review.
Here on Ozarks, we cover quite a few news stories that happen in the towns and cities of Northwest Arkansas. Here are a few that we covered over the past week. In Cave Springs, the talk of the town was that work will begin in the coming months on building a new sewer network in the city's downtown area. Mayor Larry Smith says that while the city has a wastewater treatment plant, the lack of downtown sewer infrastructure is holding the city back.
There was a lot of the old septic tanks downtown that have been here several years. I mean, we're talking about 50 or more that need to be replaced, and a lot of them can't because of the size of the lots. So we had a twofold situation. We needed to help some of the lower-income people downtown, so we did a low- to moderate-income survey. And then when we did the survey, we had a survey of the businesses. The businesses have some failing septic tanks and some that are doing makeshift stuff to make it happen.
After completing the survey, the city applied for a community development block grant through the Arkansas Natural Resources Commission and Arkansas Economic Development Program. Mayor Smith says that the city received just over $1.25 million in grant money to build sewer infrastructure in the downtown area of Cave Springs. Smith says that the new sewer system is expected to have a huge economic impact on the city.
I have several people that pass here and stop in and say, you know, I'd like to put a business in Cave Springs, because we've got 10,000 cars a day pass here. Our highway department has taken a survey, and on any given day, there's 8,000 to 10,000 cars passing here on Highway 112. And so we feel like the businesses will want to come because we're steady growing. We've grown quite a bit. You know, we're building new houses in Cave Springs every day. As we grow, and you know, you put businesses in, the rooftops will come. But you know, in this case, the rooftops are already beginning to come, so people want to put businesses here.
Smith says that only preliminary engineering work has been done so far on the project, but he expects the entire process, including finalizing engineering work, advertising for bids, and construction, to take about a year, maybe less, depending on the winter weather. In Bentonville news, the city announced Monday that the Bentonville Airport has been named the 2012 Arkansas Airport of the Year. The honor was bestowed on Louise M. Thaden Field during the Arkansas Airport Operators Annual Conference on September 25th. Mayor Bob McCaslin says the honor is a nice recognition of renovations that have taken place over the past 5 years at the airport.
We had a devastating tornado in March of 2006 that took care of our terminal and some other ancillary buildings at the airport, and they were for sure out of date, and we were going to replace them. We just didn't know that the tornado would help us do that at a faster rate of speed. So they're recognizing the fact that we've made a commitment to our airport for general aviation, and we think that over a period of 5 years, the improvements are magnificent.
McCaslin says that while the airport may be small, it has the distinct advantage of having a terminal within 10 minutes of the headquarters of the largest retailer in the world. The city of Rogers is in the process of updating its sign ordinance. Earlier this week, the city held a public hearing on the changes to the ordinance, and senior city planner Daryl Smith says that the hearing brought up a few issues that needed clarification in the code.
There was one part that said highway right-of-way, and they wanted to make sure that that included local streets as well, so we changed that. One person asked us to change some wording to allow a logo for a church instead of just the name and address. She was concerned that people that couldn't read wouldn't be able to know where to find a church, so we're going to allow a logo on a church sign. On the digital billboards, there was some wording on the brightness and making sure that we get the brightness all that cleaned up.
Smith says that the planning department is working with the city attorney to clarify the language in the revised ordinance to be again put before residents in a public hearing next month. And yesterday in Rogers, the Rogers Lowell Area Chamber of Commerce hosted the 12th annual Northwest Arkansas International Festival. The festival started years ago at Lake Atalanta and was hosted by the city of Rogers, but the event was eventually moved to Frisco Station in the downtown area. Brad Phillips is the Vice President of Marketing Communications at the Chamber.
The Chamber saw it and felt it was an opportunity, an event with such potential, that we took it over several years ago and have grown it into what it is today. I think what makes it popular is it's a chance for different cultures, different populations that move to the area to kind of get a feel for their costumes and their foods and a lot of games for the kids. The entire family can enjoy something here and have a good time.
Phillips says that the festival is emblematic of the diversity now found in Northwest Arkansas.
In Rogers alone, over 30% of the population now is Hispanic. We have a growing Marshallese population from the Marshall Islands in the Springdale area, and in Walmart's bringing in a lot of IT people from India. So we're growing in diversity, and this event's all about that. That's the mission, is to help people learn and experience different cultures that live here in the population of Northwest Arkansas.
And finally, although it technically isn't a town, here's a story about Beaver Lake. Earlier in the week, I spoke with Michael Richards, the assistant lake manager with the Army Corps of Engineers. The topic of our conversation was algae that has bloomed on Beaver Lake. Richards says that the algae blooms won't stay around for very long.
The algae bloom is really very sporadic. It shows up and could be there like maybe a day, 2 days, and then just disappears. It blooms very fast and is dissipated by, you know, wind or any time changes in the water temperature or air temperature. And it dilutes pretty well, too, as far as that goes. It's an algae that normally blooms, you know, whenever conditions get right, drought-type conditions or warmer weather, those types of things.
Richards says that the blue-green algae, known to scientists as Oscillatoria limosa, should not be a concern to residents turning on the tap for drinking water.
The drinking water that is pulled from Beaver Lake from the different sources, they treat the drinking water for all kinds of things, including algae and other types of elements that are in the water to render the water safe for human consumption.
The algae typically forms on the lake during the transition from summer to fall. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Timothy Dennis.
This is Weekend Ozarks at Large. October is National Bully Awareness Month. And joining me in the studio now is Erica Boffman, Director of School-Based Services for Washington County with Ozark Guidance Center. Hello.
Hello. Good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for joining me.
Yes.
You're joining me today because you have a panel coming up on cyberbullying.
Yes. This on Tuesday, October 16th from 6:30 to 8:30. We're going to be having a cyberbullying panel discussion at Holtz Middle School. I was brought in. It's put on by the League of Women Voters of Washington County, and I was brought in as somebody who was identified to help bring some information about cyberbullying. I've done some presentations at the state level on cyberbullying, and with school-based services, we see a lot of impact in terms of clients that we serve who have either been a victim, a bully, or bystander to cyberbullying.
Cyberbullying.
Mm-hmm.
It's bullying. It's not just Facebook.
Right. It's considered any form of bullying that takes place with technology. So texting, anything on social media, emailing, anything that requires some sort of technology, sending pictures that are either inappropriate or maybe are embarrassing for someone, just using some form of social media technology to bully someone else.
Is there a certain age group that you see this with more?
Bullying in general tends to peak in the middle school ages, but with cyberbullying, it just extends to all levels that I think even adults that have Facebook pages, you probably see things like cyberbullying going on. What's happened with all the technology is that what somebody may not do face-to-face to someone else, they do over these forms of social media or in texting, things that they would have never said to someone's face, they're now putting on a Facebook status, not thinking about the impact that that might have on someone else. And when you think about kids and teenagers, cognitively, they're not where they need to be in terms of reasoning that adults have. And so the steps that they should take to consider all the consequences of what may happen when they put things on Facebook, say, or Twitter, they don't think about all those consequences. And so they, beyond just cyberbullying, they may just put things on there that are embarrassing that when they're 30, they're going to wish they hadn't had put on their Facebook page.
What kind of things are we talking about?
Well, you see a wide range of things. I think you see very maybe minor type of issues of somebody. Facebook is a great example because so many people have familiarity with that. So somebody may post a rude comment about someone on Facebook in a status, and then other people may like that status. And then that just adds to the impact on the person who was the target of that. You see more extreme things like people setting up Facebook fan pages that are, you know, against a person. Again, just conversations that may have happened between kids in a play yard or things like that or in the halls at school are now just extending to all these different places. So what you might see, too, is think about the rivalries we have between schools. So two schools may have a football game against each other, and rather than just comments that go back and forth at the games, they may be taking that to Twitter and to Facebook or those type of medias and making comments towards each other on it, and it just continues to go further and further at times.
It's a lot different than when I was in school.
Yes. What I tend to say when I do these trainings is we think about teenagers are making the same mistakes that all teenagers have been making for years, that we all made as teenagers, and that since the beginning of time, because that's part of that learning process and finding their identity. Just now there's proof of what they did. There's social media. There's pictures on the internet of things that they do. And so when you take it then to things like bullying, it just can get just more out of control. The other thing that makes it so challenging is that when cyberbullying didn't exist, if a kid was targeted at school, they could go home and that was maybe a safe place for them where it stopped. Now the bullying can continue all the time.
Parental controls, like on computers, I mean, is that something that
I think
parents...
that's an important thing to know. I think anyone who has kids and teenagers know that they are much smarter than we are on anything that is technology-based, and that will always be the case. So I've worked with teenagers through a lot of my career as a therapist, and it always amazed me the firewalls that they're able to get through. And so I think you have to do more than just do that. I think that's a great thing. You used to say things like, make sure the computer is in a public area within your house so then you can see what's going on. Well, now with smartphones, they carry the computer with them. And so a lot of what we talk about with cyberbullying is just also safety in terms of internet and decision making. So it's important to always know what your kids are doing on the computer and with their texting. Just to check on that, to have the conversations about what's appropriate, what's not. If you see things that maybe they shouldn't be doing, if they're commenting on something, to just bring that to their attention. I think about maybe a teenager who says something like, the boy next to me smells in class, and they put that as their status update. That probably doesn't even occur to them that that's targeting that person, that people know who you're identifying even without using the name, and how that might be hurtful. So if a parent sees something like that, they really want to take their child aside and talk about that and talk about how that was maybe not a nice thing to say and do, even though they maybe didn't think about the extent. Because if they had said that to their best friend, maybe it wouldn't have gone anywhere else. But when you put it out there, it really is putting it out there for the world to see.
Right.
And then you think about that kid that you said that about, and then if 50 people like it, then now all of a sudden they've been targeted by 51 people.
You mentioned just talking to your kids. I mean, it kind of sounds like the good old golden rule.
Mm-hmm.
Just making sure that kids understand that.
Do
unto others. Yeah.
Exactly. And talking about it. Exactly. Mm-hmm. Sitting them down, talking about it, discussing it with them, helping them with that reasoning, and just addressing it. I think what happens is we don't tend to address things like we should and just really come out and say, let's talk about this. These are the tough conversations to have as parents. You know, teenagers don't want to listen to their parents on much things at that age. And sometimes we just have to do that and just sit down and talk with them about the dangers. And again, not just with cyberbullying, but also just with their safety on the internet and making sure, let's look at your friends on Facebook. How do you know these people?
Well, let's talk about consequences.
What happens with the schools is it becomes very difficult on where is the line between where the school can act on something and where they can't. And typically, schools most often say if it bleeds over into the school day, then that needs to be something they address. But definitely, if you're making threats to someone, those are things that now are in writing. So if it's something that's considered harassment or terroristic threatening and things like that, now you have proof of that. And so there are going to be consequences. Sending a picture of someone who, you know, teenagers don't think about, if my 14-year-old girlfriend sends me a picture of herself that's inappropriate and I pass that along, that's engaging in child pornography. And so there's cases where people have been charged with that. So it's just really making smart decisions and understanding the consequences of your behaviors.
What are age limits these days for Facebook? And isn't there a website called My Yearbook? And
there's so many different ones. They all have different setups. I believe now with Facebook it's 16, but I'm not 100% sure on what the age limit is. But what typically happens is that people just lie about their age. I hear parents say a lot that they know that their child has a Facebook page and they're under the age limit, but rather than fill out all the paperwork that it takes to approve it, they just allow them to make their age older, and then they hide the year. So it's not showing to people that they're 20, but they've set it up so that they're 20. That way they don't have to go through all of that paperwork. So it's easy to get around those things, even though I do think that the social media has really responded by trying to have things better controlled by parents. But parents are oftentimes making that decision to say, just do it on your own. Or what I see a lot is that maybe the parent is not allowing a Facebook page, but that doesn't mean that the child doesn't have one.
Mm-hmm. Who else will be joining you during this panel discussion on Tuesday?
I know that we will be having a representative from Cox Communications to talk about that, someone from the police department to talk about the safeties there, and then I'm not a school counselor as well was going to be identified to come and talk, just to provide some different perspectives of who all will be there and to help teach. Again, parents and teachers understand the different aspects of it.
Okay. All right. Well, that's 6:30 at Holt Middle School in Fayetteville on Tuesday, the 16th.
Yes.
Okay. All right. Thank you, Erica.
Thank you.
This weekend brought the first of really fall temperatures. But before the real harsh weather hits us, Joe Neal takes us outdoors.
Have you ever heard this spaceship out in the shady shrubs of your yard? No need to panic. It's just a bird, and harmless, unless you're a small insect or a mulberry. This is not a flying saucer hovering over western Arkansas. Little green people are not taking over Earth. This is Swainson's thrush, not a Martian, but rather a modest olive-backed bird, cousin to our familiar robin. It has a passport good anywhere in the Americas. Swainson's thrush transits through Arkansas in spring, headed north from its winter range in central and northern South America. I hear them from mid-April, sometimes to the first days of June. Thereafter, their songs fill forests well north in the Rocky Mountains and all across Canada and Alaska. In the following recording, Swainson's thrush shares the soundstage with a song sparrow. During spring migration, I was over at the Buffalo River with a birding group from Hot Springs Village. We had something of a slow, hot, sunny day until we found cool shade in a pioneer cemetery. There, perched on a rail fence, was Swainson's thrush. It kept a cool, dark eye on us, then flew. In a few minutes, we spotted it in a mulberry tree full of ripening fruit. The bird eyed the fruit carefully and then made quick, short flight, plucking off a berry. In the following recording, Swainson's thrush and an alarmed squirrel share the soundstage. Compared to the northward migration of spring, the fall migration is entirely different. We see very few birds and rarely hear any. During this southward migration, most Swainson's thrushes fly well east of Arkansas. In short, no spaceships in the yard in fall. It will be spring 2013 before spaceship songs again fill us with terror. There will be no need to call Homeland Security now that we know this song.
Joe Neal is the co-author of Arkansas Birds, published by the University of Arkansas Press. His latest book is In the Province of Birds, a Western Arkansas memoir.
This is Weekend Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellums.
I'm Christina Thomas.
With us is Katie Hendrickson, the host of tonight and every night's Sunday night's edition of Sunday Symphonies, and of note, every Monday through Friday at 11 on KUF. How are you?
Great. How are you guys?
All right.
Good. Winter, no, fall has made it here.
Fall.
It's kind of feeling like winter, though.
Mm-hmm. I agree. So do you have some winter-esque symphonies or?
Oh,
Sure. Say yes.
That's not what I was thinking of. I have three symphonies for this program. We have Shostakovich's Symphony No. 8 in C minor, Opus 65, and then we have Mozart's Symphony in D major, the Posthorn Symphony, and then we also have Haydn's 99th Symphony. So three titans of symphonies right there.
I just like to say Shostakovich.
It's a fun name to say.
Well, you said Posthorn.
Yes.
And Posthorn is kind of an announcement. Right? Where does...
So this is where the Posthorn Symphony comes from. Mozart wrote a serenade called the Posthorn Serenade, and it was actually commissioned for Salzburg University to perform. They did this thing called Finalmusik, so it's music during finals. So if anyone's familiar with that Posthorn Serenade, you'll recognize a lot of the themes in the symphony. You could say it's a remix in a way, but it's an expansion, and Mozart did definitely, it came out of that serenade that he'd done the year before that.
I couldn't help but notice that the Haydn is going to be performed by the Cleveland Orchestra, one of the country's most renowned orchestras.
Yes, so it's the Cleveland Orchestra under George Sell, and he was with the Cleveland Orchestra until his death, which was I think in 1970, and it's from a recording that also has Haydn's Symphony No. 97 and 98 in it, and so it's like it's from 1957. It's a classic recording.
Wow, tonight at 7.
Yes, and the Shostakovich.
Oh, please.
Probably, we didn't talk about that at all, but there's a quote saying, I'm trying to figure out who said this, but I wrote down that no work of Shostakovich is grimmer, more tragic, or more violent.
Ah, so, violence in a symphony.
So it's a brooding, dark, epic symphony for sure.
So given that, do you know whether you'll play that first, second, or third tonight?
I'm putting that in the middle. Okay. Haydn's going to start off the night, and Mozart will end it. Shostakovich is right in the middle.
All-star lineup.
All right. Tonight at 7.
Thank you, Katie.
Thank you, guys.
It is Sunday, the 7th of October, 2012. I'm Kyle Kellums.
I'm Christina Thomas.
With us, Becca Martin-Brown. She's features editor at Northwest Arkansas Newspapers.
I'm always fascinated by the relocations of Shakespeare's plays.
You mean when directors reimagine where they might be?
They make them modern. They make them someplace else.
Claire Danes and Leo D.
That's the Romeo and Juliet.
Yeah.
Right. And so Northwest Arkansas Community College has taken As You Like It, which is originally set in a French court and in the forests in France, and moved it to New Orleans and the Bayou.
Not that hard a stretch to really to go from a French court
to a French quarter.
To French Quarter. Look how smart she is. Why didn't you write that lead for me? I was just thinking about the fact that, you know, you've got themes like artifice, love, injustice, religion, politics. That's pretty much New Orleans. And then you go out to the bayou for the forest part. Ashley Edwards is the director at Northwest Arkansas Community College and lead faculty for drama. And she actually had gone to school in Louisiana. Her husband's from Louisiana. So off she went with the idea. And, of course, they're incorporating Cajun music because As You Like It is often called a musical comedy.
Right.
So here's the idea. Not today, but October 11th through the 13th. There is a show today at 2. But October 11th through the 13th, there will also be Cajun-style food before the show.
I was wondering. Cajun always makes me think of food. So.
Exactly. There's a restaurant on campus at NWAC called Nola's.
As in New Orleans, Louisiana.
Exactly. And so they will be offering sampler-sized red beans and rice and muffalettas and praline cupcakes.
That sounds good.
An hour before the show on October 11th through 13th, which
is Thursday, Friday, Saturday.
Thursday, Friday, Saturday. There's a show at 2 o'clock today, no food, and a show at 2 o'clock Sunday of next weekend, no food. Tickets for the show are $6 to $8, and you can find out more at 381-1900. And also this afternoon, get thee to Eureka Springs.
Yes.
And buy me a gift.
Because?
Because there's an artist from Atlanta named James Dean who draws a character named Pete the Cat.
Oh, yes.
And I first met Pete in New Orleans. And James Dean will be at Iris at the Basin Park in Eureka Springs today from noon to 4. He has a new children's book out about Pete.
Hmm.
So, you know, if you just feel compelled to buy me something,
go.
There's a fall festival from 1 to 4 with blacksmithing and games and music at Hobbs State Park. And the last performance of 33 Variations at the University of Arkansas at 2.
As we motor into mid-October.
Thank you, Becca. Becca Martin-Brown is features editor with Northwest Arkansas Newspapers.
And here is the writer's almanac for Sunday. It's the 7th of October, 2012. It's the birthday of the Australian author Thomas Keneally, born in Sydney, 1935. Entered the seminary to become a priest, was there for 6 years, had second thoughts, left to become a writer. He said later, "I thought if I get published, I can make up for the fact that I'm a mad, ruined monk and work my way into society, including the society of girls." He's written many novels, several books of nonfiction, best known to us as the author of Schindler's Ark, the book on which the Steven Spielberg film Schindler's List was based. His latest book is Three Famines, Starvation and Politics, came out last year, about the role of government in the outcomes of three famous famines: the Irish potato famine of the 19th century, the 1943 famine in Bengal, and the Ethiopian famines of the 70s and 80s. It's the birthday of the poet Diane Ackerman, born Waukegan, Illinois, 1948, who blends science and literary art. Her first book of poems entirely about astronomy, called The Planets, A Cosmic Pastoral, best known for her book A Natural History of the Senses, came out in the 90s. And last year she published a memoir called 100 Words for Love, about her husband, a novelist, Paul West, who in 2005 suffered a stroke and suffered immense damage to the key language areas of his brain. He'd had a huge vocabulary, and he was reduced to a single syllable, mem. Took him years to recover the ability to speak. Diane Ackerman, who wrote, "It began in mystery, and it will end in mystery, but what a savage and beautiful country lies in between." It's the birthday of the Danish physicist Niels Bohr, born in Copenhagen 1885, who theorized that atoms were composed of a small, dense nucleus orbited by electrons, and came up with the idea of complementarity, that things like light or electrons can have a dual nature. And it was on this day in San Francisco, 1955, Allen Ginsberg read his poem Howl at the Six Gallery, a reading to promote the art gallery as organized by the poet Kenneth Rexroth. Gary Snyder was there and Jack Kerouac. Ginsberg was the second to the last to read. He started at about 11 o'clock at night. He was 29 years old. He'd never taken part in a poetry reading before. Started off very quietly, but as he read, he found his rhythm, took a deep breath before each of the long lines in the poem, and then said each line in one breath. Read the whole thing, and the audience went wild. Here's a poem for today by Ursula K. Le Guin, A Request. Should my tongue be tied by stroke, listen to me as if I spoke and said to you, my dear, my friend, stay here a while and take my hand. My voice is hindered by this clot, but silence says what I cannot, and you can answer as you please such undemanding words as these. Or let our conversation be a mute and patient amity, sitting all the words bygone like a stone beside a stone. It takes a while to learn to talk the long language of the rock. A Request by Ursula K. Le Guin from Finding My Elegy, New and Select Poems, 1960 to 2010, published by Houghton Mifflin Harcourt and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac. Supported by the Poetry Foundation, publisher of Poetry Magazine, the oldest monthly devoted to verse in the English-speaking world, you can join its centennial celebration and become a subscriber at poetryfoundation.org. Written by Holly Vanderhaar, engineered by Noah Smith. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
October is the month of KUAF's fall fundraising campaign. During this entire month, all contributions that we receive will count toward our fall goal. You can donate at this very moment by going online to KUAF.com.
A couple of other things happening today. Theater at UAFS will present professional New York City actor Avery Clark in a special performance at 2:30 at 2nd Street. Clark, a graduate of Fort Smith Southside High School and the University of Arkansas, has appeared on television in Guiding Light. This event is free and open to the public. For more information, 479-788-7303.
And not too long from now, I'll be in Eureka Springs with at the Unitarian Service. I've been asked to give a talk about local broadcasting in the digital age. I'm honored to be asked and look forward to it.
Which
later
you
this
are
morning.
An expert on.
Well, I'm not an expert. No, let's not use that word.
Okay. You're knowledgeable, I guess.
I will give you that, yes. Right. Okay. Ozarks at Large. Oh, this is KUAF, 91.3 FM, Fayetteville, Fort Smith, Rogers, Jasper.
Jasper. I like Jasper.
I do too.
It's a great
I like
town.
It a lot.
Ozarks at Large is a production of KUAF. I'm Christina Thomas.
I'm Kyle Kellums. Antoinette Grajeda will be with you tomorrow at noon for a brand new edition of the Daily Ozarks at Large.
All right. Happy Sunday.